Everything is better. The world is better. Minor difficulties. I like Brian Dorries from Theater of War. He's been doing these things, and occasionally they have bumps, and he's like, it's all part of the plan. Yes. If we expect the unexpected, it's all part of it.
Just a minor hiccup.
She asks what the Force, not how the Force. Yes. So, yes, just to bring it all back, Rihanna is my beautiful guest. What the Force is expanding, we're going to be covering articles and reviews and metas and just talking about more Star Wars our way. And you'll be hearing more about that, you know, in the coming week. It'll be July 27th when everything is kicking off. As far as some upcoming Star Wars news, we've had quite a bit come out since the last live stream that we've done. And that has included, you know, a whole set of Mandalorian books that are coming out. Tons and tons of stuff. Including a unique novelization, which will be really, really cool to see. We have also seen the announcement recently for From a Certain Point of View, Empire Strikes Back. And one of the stories is going to feature the Dagobah tree, which I'm super, super excited about.
Yeah, that's interesting. That sounds weird.
It sounds forcey and weird, and yes. that's my jam. Yeah, exactly. That's something I'm super excited about. And then we also heard the news in the last week about the Bad Batch, and I asked, like, who is this for? And you're like, it's for me. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit, because although I'm excited about it, when I told my kids, they were like, ew, right? Because they didn't really find any of the Clone Wars specific episodes very interesting. And I know some kids like dress up as clones, so it's not necessarily every kid. Sometimes my kids are just weird. But why are you excited about this, Rihanna?
I mean, I have loved the clones. They're all my children.
Rex is like, one of my loves.
I think they're so fascinating as, you know, characters, like, inherently, because they were created for the single purpose of fighting and going to war. And it's like that question of what happens after the war was over that they sort of ask within the series. So I feel like the Bad Batch would allow them to sort of explore, that side of the clones. And also, as soon as I met the Bad Batch on TV, I'm like, they, you know, escape Order 66, because I feel like if they already have like a dysfunction, I feel like their chips might not work like the other clones did. So I was just very interested in them from the get-go. I didn't think we were going to get a whole TV show, but I was very excited that we're getting one. I was expecting like a comic book series or something.
Yeah. And we don't know how long it's going to be. Like, is it going to be a long run show, or is it going to be like the Kenobi show, which I think has been shrunk to 8 episodes? At least that's the kind of recent rumor mill. And now potentially with Hayden Christensen involved, which is really interesting. But yeah, the Bad Batch themselves has a lot of potential to be very, very interesting. I just personally would like to see it be obvious, like any shows that are being released, very obvious where the women are. And I can't tell, because it is 5 guys played by the same man.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully we'll get some, female content there. I know on Twitter I mentioned, I was like, what if Enfys Nest mom ends up on the show?
And I was like, Enfys Nest and Enfys Nest mom? And then it's like, my 5 dads?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, like, I was definitely like, that was like a thought that I had. I was like, oh my goodness, what if that happens? I mean, maybe a long shot, but you know, there's still room for things to happen.
Yeah.
They could do something interesting with it. Like, that's all I'm saying. Like, yeah, I want new stuff, but I feel like right now they're probably like in reevaluation mode about what they're doing. So maybe that's why we're not getting anything super new.
Yeah, exactly. And you think about the production schedule on this stuff. So if this is set to come out in 2021, which I believe is the plan, it's easier for them to produce animated content. They already had all of the models in place. It's something that they can pull together very, very, very quickly and animate and have available. So although, you know, runtime on shows like this is typically, you know, 2 to 3 years before we actually see the first episode, it actually could be less time because they had all of the sort of assets created for the clones. And, you know, D, being one actor, can do all of the work for the main clones. It takes way, way less work. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's we'll a little.
See. I just want to keep an open mind and heart. I know every time something comes out, people are like, I don't want this. Who is this for? And you know, I try to keep excited about it.
Oh, like so typically I do. And for me myself, I do love kind of all Star Wars as much as possible, you know, or like I give it a chance, right? But when my kids are like, I don't see it, I get a little like, huh? Well, you know, but Mandalorian as well. Originally, when it was announced, I was like, who is this for? And it was not for who we thought it was for. So again, like, we could get one of those Trojan horse type shows that is like on the surface very much for a more masculine type crowd, but ends up having, you know, all of these other themes involved. And that's okay. But I'm a valuable person that deserves to be marketed to. And you're a valuable person that deserves to have, you know, what you want on the screen, too.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I do feel that, too. Like, I'm like, you could just outright sort of, you know, like, we're here. Like, we're not, like, new. There's been female Star Wars fans since its inception. So it's like, you don't have to, like, and I'm like, also, female audiences, I feel like, are so profitable because we're so dedicated. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's why boy bands have been successful for as long as they've been successful.
Look at BTS ARMY. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm like, I don't understand what the fear of catering to that sort of audience is when we're definitely, you know, passionate and we show up and we show our love. Monetarily as well. So like, when we love something, we love something. So I always find it so weird. I'm like, what a bizarre thing is going on over there where you're not looking at the dollars. I don't know.
And considering like how much they know the dollars and cents of, say, for example, like as an example, Frozen. They know Frozen is super... Yes. Like, is a super money maker for them. Mm-hmm. And it's not just little girls, it's women too. They know, you know, Princess and the Frog is really, really important to many, many fans of that series. And so much that they were like, you know what, let's get rid of Splash Mountain. Yeah. You know, like there's why not? I guess I just don't understand yet, maybe.
Yeah.
And is it just straight up like men just like hanging on to the thing that they consider to be so vital to their, you know, who they are? I don't know.
But it's so weird because a lot of guys will be like, oh, I don't know any girls who like Star Wars. And I'm like, well, there's a bunch of us. So maybe we don't want to talk to you about it. You know,
it's really funny. I know so many women that are like actively dating who use The Last Jedi as their like filter for men.
Yeah, same. The dude I'm talking to, he passed it. He passed the Last Jedi.
Okay,
test.
So what did he say? What did you ask, and then what did he say?
So on his profile, I saw that he dressed up as Anakin for Halloween last year. So I was like, this can go either way.
Hello.
Shaky situation. Yeah.
Hello.
So I was like, this is a shaky situation. And so I was like, oh, he was like, oh, what's that on your wall? And I'm like, oh, it's just a Star Wars poster. I'm huge. fan, you know? And then he was like, oh yeah, like, what's your favorite movie? And I'm like, oh, The Last Jedi. And I'm like, how'd you like it? And he's like, honestly, I really liked it. I thought it was really great. And I was like, bless, this is great. We can continue. I was worried if you answered that question wrong, I'm sorry, but.
Oh my God, I'm shipping you already. I need updates, like, I'm going to live vicariously through you. No, I'm just kidding. No, I love my husband, but, you know, I want you to be happy and get with a guy who loves The Last Jedi.
Me too. I want that in my heart as well.
He's going to be like, so, Rihanna, I saw you on this live stream and you, like, talked about me, and that was, oh.
No, he's busy. He's fine. He's not here. he's
ignore this. Ignore this.
Yeah, just ignore it.
So, you know, what I really loved about seeing you the first time when I spotted you on Twitter, because people were, like, sharing what you were all about, was you were talking, I think, about your Rey cosplay. Mm-hmm. And like, how important of a character she is for you. Yeah. Do you want to just kind of talk about cosplaying and, like, why that's such a draw for you?
Yeah, I've always wanted to cosplay. When I was little, I would dress up in my Halloween costume, like, not around Halloween, and sort of just run around the house all the time. My neighbor just knew that I was, like, the weird girl who ran outside with butterfly wings. I was, like, dressing up. And there was a period of my life where I just, like, dropped that. I didn't really dress up or anymore or anything like that. So, like, at the beginning of this year, I was like, I want to cosplay Rey, but I'm black and I don't want to get, like, attacked. And I posted that on Twitter. And then, like, the whole herd of, like, Star Wars people that I had not even followed, like, thousands of people came on this post and he was like, do it. And I'm like, okay, don't be so aggressive. Like, who cares? We'll fight anybody for you. And I'm like, at that moment, I was like, I really love this fandom. As crazy as it gets sometimes, like, at that moment, I was like, yeah, I'm in the right place. Because everyone was just like, do it. Rey is for everybody. Rey, nobody is for everybody. You could cosplay as her. So I did. And I'm like, you know what? I've always wanted to cosplay. Let's keep going and see what other cosplays I could do. And so I'm working on my Ahsoka cosplay, which I'm really excited for. You see that, like, white thing up there is part of.
Oh, okay. Cosplay. It might be off screen for most people, yeah. But yeah,
Okay, well, over there is, like, where the magic happens.
you're, like, working on it. Yep.
Yeah, I'm working on it, guys. It's happening. I'm just a very slow worker. So I'm working on my Ahsoka cosplay. Another person I want to cosplay eventually is Hera. Love her.
The Leku. I've always wanted to make a set of Leku. I don't know why, but I'm.
Do it.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. Like, I know on TikTok people have lots of, like, original characters who, like, you know, Twi'lek characters. And mm-hmm. I love them. I love watching, like, all these people creating their own original Star Wars characters and, like, role playing together online like that, and I've always loved that too. So I think it's really cool that, so go for it. I think that's dope.
Yeah. Hera's, like, by far the most representational character for me, because, like, some people in the fandom call me, like, space mom and stuff, because I'm like checking in on people and, like, mm-hmm. worried, and I will give advice, of course. I try not to give unsolicited advice just because not everybody needs it, mm-hmm. and sometimes people just, like, want to vent, but if people ask, I will definitely give advice.
Really and advice.
Yeah, especially about, like, podcasting or streaming, although you can see how good I am at it. but you know, like, just because I'm really passionate about other people sharing their voices, especially about Star Wars, to really show, like, the true breadth and width of how diverse and how amazing this fandom is.
Yeah, definitely.
And with that, you're actually involved in, like, two projects, which is really cool, or you're getting involved in,
yes,
in one,
yes,
project,
yes,
after this. But
yeah.
So do you want to talk about your podcast?
Yeah. So recently, I think it's, like, the first episode was probably released, like, 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. I want to say. Sisters with Sabers, or Sistas with Sabers. And it's a group of amazing Black women who are just sitting around talking about Star Wars. It's a great time. I love all the ladies on the podcast. They're amazing. Please go check it out. Our first episode was about how Ahsoka is Black. If you want to get more to that, there's a podcast where we talk about it. And recently this week we were on the Sith List podcast as guests. So that episode's being released on Sunday. So if you want to go look at that, that's, yeah. So it's a good time. Cause like, Maria, the host of the podcast, put out a tweet. She's like, I don't know any Black woman in the Star Wars fandom. Mm-hmm. And I want to do a podcast cause I don't think there's any podcast that has any of our voices. And she put out this tweet and she was like, got back so many responses and she was surprised. And so a few of the people who responded, we got together and we decided, let's make a podcast and, you know, build our own table, as she likes to say.
Yeah, no, and that's so important because not only is representation important in, you know, the movies and in the comics and, you know, in the story that is being told, but also in how we talk about the story being told in our podcasts and our live streams and our YouTubes. And along that line, you're also going to be starting something else.
I am launching a YouTube channel soon. I keep on saying, I've been saying this like all year, but I'm like, keep on getting sidetracked because the world is falling apart around us. But I, you know, I looked on YouTube, film YouTube, and I'm like, this is very male and very white. it sort of recycled a lot of the same opinions, and there's lots of things that I noticed in movies and films, just because of my individual perspectives, that simply weren't being talked about in the film community on YouTube. So I was like, I could do that. There's no one doing that. I could do that. So the reason why it's taking so long is like, I want to release a few videos out the first time when I launch it. I want to have like a few videos up. So the first video that I already have done is called Finding Finn, which is talking about Finn's like arc throughout.
Oh, so good.
The sequel trilogy and like sort of what may have happened to it, because it kind of lost the thread a little bit. So yeah, that's the first video. And I'm excited about it. And the rest of the videos you'll guys find out when I launch it.
That's so good. I love it. And of course I'll retweet as you get going, of course, so that people can see it. And I'm really excited for that endeavor because, you know, some of the advice that I've given to many people who are starting on YouTube is that we just need more voices who are talking, you know, and talking in a way that is alternative to what is currently being said.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is such an exciting journey for you. I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, that's the only good thing about, like, you know, Corona that sort of happened. I was like, you know what? Let's just do everything I've been planning on doing since forever. So I guess that's a slight benefit. I don't know if any other people have been making bread, so I've been making videos.
Yeah, I especially your TikTok ones are just so full of life. I love it. I just, you know, I do want to say to people who are listening or watching, it's okay if you're not feeling like you can get stuff done right now, because like one of the hardest things about, you know, this situation and what's happening is we often feel bad because it's like, well, we have all this time. Why aren't we doing stuff? Well, you know what? Actually, the stress of just living right now is too much. And from a psychological perspective, just getting through the day is literally like enough. Yeah. And it's okay. You're not alone. There are days, hey, I just like break out in tears because that's what's happening today. But I find a lot of joy in live streaming and in doing the podcast. And so that's where I get something back. And I feel like I've accomplished something if I've done those things. Yeah. It's okay if it's just, hey, I got through the day. That's okay too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, like when I make my videos or my TikToks, they're definitely to be like, I don't want to deal with actual real world problems. I'm going to talk about Star Wars.
It's a yeah. version of escapism. Oh, people are asking what your TikTok
is. Oh, yeah. Wait, when you forget your own handle on TikTok. One moment, let me go check. I'm like, did I change it recently? I don't know. Sorry. I think I changed it like recently because, you know, my family found it. But no, Bina Ray. So I'm going to type it into the chat for y'all.
Exactly.
There you go. It's Bina underscore Ray. So it's really simple to find.
It's like you and Ray, which is like,
yeah.
A perfect Venn diagram.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I did want to talk a little bit before we get to the Q&A about our good friend, Maul.
Yes. Yes, Maul, who is very much alive. He's okay. He's just taking a nap. He's on vacation. He's okay.
Because, you know, separately, and it felt like very independently after the last episode of Clone Wars, you know, where he runs away. Both you and I started tweeting that he's alive, and it was very funny. I was like, oh my god, other people think this? I thought I was kind of crazy. That's awesome. All right, let's talk about it. So why do you think that Maul is alive?
Okay, so, well, first of all, when I first said it, I was just like, you know, he's like, you know, denial, you know, that's how it starts first. And then I was like, wait. And I started rewatching Rebels after I watched The Clone Wars. And I was like, there might be. Because I always made a joke that it was like, if you don't see a character die on screen or become a Force ghost, they're not dead. In Star Wars, if you don't see it happen, you know. And with, you know, Maul, that last scene, I'm like, he could just be injured. You know, and they just sort of end the scene there. And also, there's a whole bunch of interesting comparisons to him and the
sun. Yeah.
And the Mortis arc. And it's just like, you know, maybe, you know, there's something there. And just it's a lot of really weird similarities. And so I'm just like, you know, Ahsoka and Maul have ascended into Force goddom, and they're both fine and alive, and, you know, they can't die. It's fine. Yeah, so there's, like, just a lot of things. There's, like, things that are there. You're just like, maybe he's not dead. Maybe. And the World Between Worlds sort of is, like, this interesting space in Star Wars that we haven't really explored yet too much.
Yeah.
So we honestly don't really know anything about that space. And there's just a lot of interesting, weird things going on. So anything's possible. And, you know, I'm a Pollyanna, so I'm hoping that Maul is alive because I don't want him to be dead. Yeah, you know, things are built on hope. You know, that's what this is all about. So, yeah, so there's just a lot of interesting things going on that you're just like,
God, you're
not dead.
Your thinking is so much in line with my thinking. So, okay, let's talk about Star Wars. Yes. One of the big fundamentals about Star Wars is that light and dark cannot exist without each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Ahsoka has taken on this role of replacing the daughter from a mythological perspective. She has the owl, the Morai. She, like, literally both of them are right there behind me. the Morai that follows her around. And, you know, we saw that shot in the last episode of Clone Wars, which I loved so much and I freaked out about. And I know many women I know were like, yo, the Morai, yeah. And it mythologically, it's very, very important that she has stepped into the realm of the unknown already at that point in the story.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to Mortis, because when you actually listen to Dave Filoni talk about Mortis and the Mortis arc and then talk about the World Between Worlds, he uses the exact same language. This is a place that exists within the Force. Mm-hmm. The son and the daughter in Mortis represent this balance, this duality within Star Wars. If the daughter lives, then the son must also live. And they all die. All of those people die in Mortis. They all don't survive. And so where is the son? The son potentially could be Morley, who fed Maul in those episodes of the Clone Wars when he had his spider legs, when he was basically in the underworld. And if you look at the structure of Mortis, you have the aspect of life. So the planet comes back to life during the day and becomes death and decay at night. So if you have those two pieces of the same kind of eternal process that are represented in Mortis, and you have the daughter who represents life and light and all of those things, you need to have something that will represent death and decay.
Yeah.
And Maul and Ahsoka keep on showing up together in this eternal battle.
Yeah.
Guess what's going to happen? Maul can't die. Like, that's so by dying, he has fulfilled his role as becoming death in the galaxy. That's what's happened. By being killed with compassion, he will become a new Force God, basically.
Yeah.
And so if Ahsoka shows up in Mandalorian, if she shows up in Bad Batch, if she shows up anywhere, he will probably be there too in some way as a version of temptation. And it would be very biblical and religious / mythological if he showed up in the Tatooine desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, that's, I'm like, so like, I can barely speak. I'm like, yes, I'm so excited to see all those things. And I see people talking in the chat, like, just let characters die in Star Wars. And to that, I think, like, yes, there's some characters like that, you know, should be dead and things like that. But I feel like if it has a serves like a purpose for the storytelling to bring a character back, then I'm all for it. If it doesn't make sense, then yeah, leave it out. Yeah, like someone said, it was like another Palpatine situation. Palpatine coming back could have worked really well. If, you know, they did it better. And again, like, you know, I trust Dave Filoni. He's been pretty good to me and good to us.
Absolutely.
Storytelling wise. And yeah, so if he decides to bring Maul back in that way, which I hope and pray he does.
Yeah. I feel this is kind of like me reading Dave Filoni. I feel like people telling him you can't bring characters back once they're dead is enough for him to be like, I can do whatever I want. And he already did that once with Ahsoka, right? And that was like, he had already had the plan and everything like that. And I think that, like, his mind just thinks about the way that there is always selfishness in the galaxy. There is always selflessness in the galaxy. There is always light. There is always dark. And he would never, Dave Filoni would never be like, there is only the light side now, guys. Yeah. They would never. Like, yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't make sense. There's no balance with that.
You have
to bring in the dark side, you know?
And I mean, again, there could be another person that could replace that character of the sun or the death god or the god of death and decay or the god of the dark. But I think that Maul is the best candidate, and to die, and mythologically dying actually is not really an impediment to becoming a Force God. It's actually kind of part of the process. You kind of have to die to be reborn in your new form.
Yeah. And you know, that scene, the end scene with Kenobi and Maul was just absolutely stunning, and I feel like that would be an amazing place for Maul to start a new journey, honestly, because I also feel like that's probably another point where Obi-Wan is starting maybe a new cycle in his journey, even though we don't necessarily see it on screen as of yet.
Yeah, and it would be really, really interesting to have, like, there's so many cool things they could do. Like, they could have Maul come back. Like, and I'm specifically thinking the reason they would bring Maul back would be temptation for Ezra, because Ezra is kind of like a key figure in in the universe as well. He's kind of one of those pivotal people because there is going to be more than just Anakin, the chosen one. The mythology has to grow. And they're saying that this is, you know, by having Ahsoka live and going off on a different direction, there's a different mythological branch that they're telling. And mm-hmm. in mythology, there is more than one hero. There is more than one important story to tell. And we're just going to have to get used to moving away from the Skywalkers, I think.
Yeah. As much as I love them, those chaotic Skywalkers.
Yeah.
But I'm really interested to see where Ezra is. What are you doing?
Just, I made a joke on Twitter a while back. Ezra's just hanging out in Hondo's basement with a space whale and Thrawn watching tunes.
He was just like, you know what? I've had enough of this. I can't do all this, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Rebellion stuff. Bye.
Yeah, like I just, you know, it's really like kind of the simplest sort of math to say 1 + 1 = 2. Like we know the answer is always 2, and where's the other one?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And actually, truthfully, the answer is always a triangle, but we won't get into that.
Yeah. That's a whole nother rabbit hole.
Okay, let's get into some Q&A questions. Nice. All right. So just as a reminder, I always answer Patreon questions first, and then I select kind of some other questions from the general audience that I'm interested in answering. So our first question is from Lady Valkyrie on Twitter, or Hi. Valkyrie Art. I love Lady V so much. what do you imagine an elderly Ahsoka traversing the world between world to be talking about with Ben Solo? this is a layered question. First, elderly Ahsoka talking with Ben Solo. I feel like she would share Anakin's downfall and the hopes that she would have had for him to have come back and, you know, not gone the way that he did, but still probably proud of him, of Ben Solo, that he didn't end up, well, he sacrificed himself for the person that he loved. I think she would have understood that.
You know, and there's also, like, you know, I do think Ahsoka is a Force god, so whether she'd be elderly or not, that's the one thing when I said elderly, like, oh, would she be elderly? I don't know. But that's another thing. What she'd be talking about with Ben? Yeah, I definitely think she'd be talking about Anakin and sort of what he was beyond.
Probably Padme, too.
Yeah. Someone please talk about Padme, please.
For some reason, she's raced.
Yeah. I'm not even going to hop into that. But yeah, I think she'd definitely be talking about his grandparents with him. And, you know, Ben Solo's always been sort of like restless. I feel like he wouldn't necessarily be okay just chilling in the world between worlds, not doing anything. So maybe they'd be debating, you know, how to get out or if he should be trying to get out of the world between worlds. And
It kind of sounds like he's stuck too. So it could be just for me to play out of action. that would be good. All right. So the next question is from How Rude. Can you talk about the surge in popularity of found family tropes, and why do you think it's having a moment, and what are examples of it being well done or being done poorly? You want to take this one on? You want me to start? Yeah.
I love the found family trope. It's one of my favorite tropes when done well. Lately, it's not been being done well in a lot of media. I really love found family tropes because I definitely think, like, especially with our generation, I feel like there's definitely more of that where we move away from the need to be tied down to, like, familial traditions where blood is the only thing that we have, even if it's a toxic thing. So we're all going out to find our unit. Mm-hmm. So seeing stories with family is just, feel like, resonates with all of us, because we're just like, we just want to find our family, whether or not they're by blood or not. So I think there's that popularity with the found family trope, but I feel like a lot of writers maybe think like a whole bunch of characters hang out together in a dangerous situation and now they're family. Like, no, that's not how it works. Now it's kind of just going back to like that toxic family where you feel like you're stuck within that unit.
Yeah.
Just because of circumstance. Now, found family happens like because you've chosen these people, even if it's messy or not. So one example of a bad family, found family, is the sequel trilogy. That's a bad found family. It's just sort of like the narrative says that they are together and they are friends, even though nothing really happens emotionally substantial, like, for you to be sold mm-hmm. on that idea. Another example of the bad found family trope is Voltron Legendary Defender, the animated show on Netflix. It was really good in the first three seasons, had a lot of potential, and then something happened. If you know, you know, like, what that show was, a mess. By the last season, it was a dumpster fire. And I'm like, you cannot, none of these people actually like each other. And one of the characters actually say that out loud, like, we don't actually like each other. We just got thrown into this situation together. And I'm like, but you're going to tell me that they're a found family? I don't.
Yeah. And I think that that's the confusion of, like, creators like saying, oh, this is a found family thing, and then not understanding their own narrative in it.
Yeah.
Like, I think Rebels is the perfect example in Star Wars, yeah, because it was set up that way to say you're all living in the same house ship and you're now all together and you support each other, and they go through these like very awkward family type situations, and it fits really well. We have mom, dad, we have brothers, we have, you know, Sabine, etc., and Chopper, who's like the weird uncle.
It's a drunk uncle in a Hawaiian shirt, always trying to fight people at the cookout.
Absolutely.
Uncle Chopper, where'd you get a wrench from?
Why are you hitting me? Yeah. I think Rebels is really good, but as far as like a non like, you know, set up that way, I think that Ahsoka and her clone units,
oh my gosh,
as well as Ahsoka and Rex, are a perfect found family, in my opinion.
Yeah. And non-Star Wars thing, I don't know a lot. If anyone likes Dungeons and Dragons, hello, I'm a mega nerd.
Hello.
A Critical Role.
Yeah.
Freaking fantastic. Excellent found family. If you love found family and you love hours and hours and hours and hours of content, Critical Role is for you. It's amazing. It's in podcast forms on YouTube. It's excellent found family. I cry all the time because I'm just like, they love each other so much. It's a really good example of found family, especially because the cast that plays all the characters are a found family themselves. So they really get into that, their characters really well. That's a good example. If anyone wants to hop on over there, you know, and
yeah,
if you like Critical Role, please come to me. I need more Star Wars Critical Role fans. Friends. Please say hello.
Where are the critters be at?
Yeah, where are the critters? I'm looking for y'all.
So thank you, Harud, for that question. The next question is from Anissa, or Maha Reyes, I think is how you pronounce it on Twitter. Where do you see hope for the franchise going forward in terms of themes and narrative? I think that they're going to continue to express the same themes that they've always kind of expressed. I hope that they dig more into one of the most important themes, which is like transcendence, finding a balance between, you know, the darkness in ourselves and the light, and finding a way to move forward past that. I think it's absolutely the most important thing that they can plug into in this day and age, making everything hope punk, i.e. hope in the face of overwhelming odds. And it's absolutely the type of narrative that we need right now.
Yeah, I kind of hope they'll delve more into like the integration of the shadow, because I feel like a lot of it's been a radical, like a lot of our heroes in Star Wars have just radically rejected the dark in a way that I feel like is unhealthy. You know, I feel like it led to Luke's mistakes that he's made, and definitely Rey's a midsummer 5-yard stare at the end of The Rise of Skywalker. This rejection of the dark that cannot exist within Star Wars and can't exist in real life. So feel like
understanding your darkness and moving forward. And I feel like, as much to harp on Mo Lives, like, he is such a popular character, understanding the power that you have from a dark space and how you cannot reject that. You have to understand it is so important for everyone living.
Yeah. I feel like the only thing keeping Maul from the light is because he's never been introduced to it. But he definitely understands his darkness and things like that. But the light, I feel like it's just an alien to him, but he understands his darkness really well, which I think also a really compelling character, putting him up against other characters like Obi-Wan, who sort of is very terrified of that kind of part of himself.
Yeah, Obi-Wan really is scared of the things that he would consider to be selfish desires. Which is really interesting. I hope he faces off against some shadow stuff in his in his own series. So this one is from Tigranosaurus one. I believe powerful stories contain moments of great beauty at all levels. Much of our attention tends to be drawn to epic ones. My question is to the other side of the scale. What are your favorite small moments in Star Wars? Apparently mundane, yet somehow poignant. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you can go first. Let me think about it.
I really appreciate Laughing Buddha Yoda that we get not only on Dagobah, but also coming back in The Last Jedi. He becomes the Yoda we see in the prequels. And so we kind of see this version of Yoda in all three trilogies, where he is trying to be like, the world is kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, don't take everything too seriously. And it's his way of kind of, I would say if he was anything in his true inner self, it is this like laughing, childlike ancient.
Yeah.
and I love that about Yoda. And I hope that when we get the newest version of our Yoda Buddha, baby Yoda, that he has some sort of like play, I think, that comes out in his character as he grows with the Mandalorian. Yeah. I think that would be a really good tie into Laughing Buddha Yoda.
Yeah, I think he does have a little bit of a, you know, mischievous streak, especially that scene where he's like reaching to turn on the thing while looking at Mando. Like, he does have a little, you can tell, like, he's a little mischievous, you know, child a little bit. A really quiet moment that I like. The two things that are sort of coming to my head, the scene in the episode of the Clone Wars where they find that Twi'lek child and they're sort of babysitting this Twi'lek child while they're in the middle of like a war zone. I really love that episode. I was like, I love this
Mira.
So much. This
is so cool. I think Numi, what's her name? She comes back later in Rebels.
Yeah. And I just really loved, because, like, you know, it emphasized the thing, like, things that happen in a child's life. When most people think of children.
Mira. Somebody pointed that out.
Okay. Thank you. You know, as children, we don't think things impact them or they won't remember. Or like, oh, they're not paying attention. But I work with kids, and kids are so astute. Mm-hmm. And they're so... They pick up on things, and people don't realize like the little things that like affect you as a child that you grow up as. So like when you see her as in Rebels older and she is, you know, a rebel, you know, you can see that that moment impacted her, even though if you look back on the Clone Wars, it was just this one really small moment, but it clearly had this huge impact on her life, which I think is important, you know, because Star Wars is for kids mm-hmm. and, you know, the media you consume when you're younger, you know, does have an effect on you when you.
Yeah, it helps. So, it helps you define what is story as you grow up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it landed well with you and you sought out more like it, or maybe it didn't and you seek out different, or, you know, it made you love certain things, and it ends up affecting how you tell stories to your kids too.
Yeah. And yeah. Our personalities is basically the narratives we tell ourselves, our self narrative.
Absolutely.
That we tell the world. So how we consume narratives and how we perceive narratives defines, I think, who we are and how we present ourselves to the world as well. So I just really like that moment because clearly that, you know, it had lasting effects, even though it was a small sort of blip on these clones' life.
Yeah, exactly. So this one is from Rahab. I hope I pronounced that correctly. I'm bad. I'm sorry. Hey, yo, love the show. Do you think that we will ever have a positive angle to the dark side of the Force and a negative angle to the light side? Or are we doomed for the eternal cycle of bad guys being with aggressive bad guy powers? Okay, this is a big question. And yeah, I actually do think... I think it depends on where they decide to go, because they tend to make it very black and white. And then only have moments of transcendence where it kind of all like filters through to say, hey, maybe everything isn't black and white. And I'm not saying that things are gray, because that's kind of a mistake. The idea is that, especially if you think about things from a shadow perspective, from Jung or from Robert Bly, that we gain our power as people from our darkness, from our shadow. And so it's where we get our creativity from. It's where we get our ability to solve problems. It's probably why Anakin was such a kick-ass Jedi, was actually because he tapped into the darkness throughout his life as a Jedi. It's where you get power from, aggression, anger, etc. It's where you draw in power. But understanding that and then not being drawn into that, only using it as like, oh, it happened to come across, and then, you know, continuously trying to turn towards compassion and care for others as what you're trying to achieve, that's, you know, because it's never going to be one thing or the other in true humans. You have to find the balance between both of them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so do I think there will ever be a positive angle to the dark side? Well, boy, oh boy, I sure do hope so.
I mean, we get a bit of it, like, with the Night Sisters, I feel like, because they're not really treated, like, the same as, like, Dark Force users, typically.
Yeah, even though they do get, you know, wiped out. So narratively, it's kind of making it sound like they're not that great if they get killed off. I have mixed feelings about the way the Night Sisters are portrayed, because when we were talking in the Sisters of Sabers podcast, actually, we talk about the Night Sisters and sort of how definitely their magical abilities sort of is reminiscent of like voodoo. And voodoo tends to have really negative connotations hanging off of it as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's, so I feel like the narrative is sort of neutral with the Night Sisters' version of the dark side. It's not really embraced. It's not like saying, oh, this is not as bad as this. It's sort of just like, it's sort of othered. It's like, this is a weird sort of thing. It's the other, but it's never really explored whether it's like as bad as like the Sith or something like that. So it's sort of like open-ended. I do hope that there will be more of a focus, maybe a positive, not necessarily a positive angle of the dark side, but maybe just like a highlight on them, like maybe a story more focused on the dark side. Especially if you put like the Old Republic video game, and if you there's like a whole bunch of Sith before the Rule of Two. What was that like?
Yeah.
What was that kind of environment? How did that work? did they have a sense of camaraderie, or were they just all stabbing each other in their back? And that's why they're just like, okay, only two of us, because we just can't get along, or, you know? Mm-hmm. So I hope, maybe not necessarily a positive angle, but definitely more exploration of it, because I feel like nothing, even the dark side, nothing is completely good, nothing is completely bad. Like, I always joke, like, if I was in Star Wars and I had the Force, I'd be on the dark side. I always joke about that. Because I feel like if you think about it, like, there's a bit of freedom in the dark, I feel like, but it's also, yeah, like Maul shows us it's sort of a prison as well. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the light side, you know, there's some parts of it like that feel sort of shackling. But it's also sort of freeing. So again, it's like finding that balance. So I hope we get to explore it more. I don't know if it'll be presented in a positive light. Just more exploration, because it's sort of...
Yeah, I wouldn't say positive light, although it already kind of is positive for some people. And by positive, I mean idealistic, because like you think about Star Wars, if it had a mascot, it would be Darth Vader. Right. Mm-hmm. People like control and they like power and they like not having others be able to tell them what to do. Like, people already idealize the dark side. I think what especially the sequel trilogy has done, and like canon materials since the Disney acquisition especially, it has made us sympathetic to the dark side, to understand, mm-hmm, like, there are reasons why people fall. There are reasons why we should have sympathy for people who are on the dark side, as well as understand that they gain power, and sometimes it's in an effort to control things that they have no other way of controlling. Yeah, it's a tough question, because fundamentally the dark side, quote unquote, is just pure selfishness, or some level of selfishness that people are trying to plug into so that they can give themselves more control over the world that they live in. And the whole point of Star Wars is to tell you that, yeah, you sometimes have to be selfish, but ideally you should try to be selfless in what you are working towards. But unfortunately, all humans gotta eat. We all gotta eat, and that's selfish. We all gotta sleep, and that means that other people, you know, can't sleep in the bed that we were choosing to sleep in. So it's a balance in all things, and that's my hope that we'll get, is that the understanding that being selfish towards taking care of yourself is actually an act that you do need to do, and that caring for others that you love, etc., is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think that, like, you know, oftentimes I feel like selfishness also gets a bad rep, but like you said, you know, you have to eat.
Yeah.
You gotta do those things. And, you know, like, in that moment when Ahsoka leaves the Order, there was a cut scene where I posted on Twitter later. I found a TikTok of it. Where this cutscene where Anakin and Obi-Wan are talking about Ahsoka leaving, and Anakin calls her selfish for leaving. Mm-hmm. And then Obi-Wan's like, well, you can't control what people do. Light side is about, you know, choice as well. And I think that's interesting that, like, Ahsoka's like, she's still very light side. She's like,
but she had to take care of herself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I feel like that she found her balance, and it was not with the Jedi, where Anakin couldn't find a balance, so he just fell to the dark because he's just like, I can't do this. This is too much. And Obi-Wan just went straight into the light side, and by that, he lost the people dearest to him, because he just couldn't find a balance of, you know, being just a little bit selfish. And if he had been a little bit more selfish, I feel like, you know, maybe Anakin wouldn't have fallen. Maybe, you know, Satine would still be here, you know, things like that. So I feel like it's interesting that Ahsoka is, like, I feel like more light than some other characters, and it's because she was managed to find that little bit of selfishness to have that self-preservation, to know that this wasn't the place where she was going to thrive. That's a little tangent, but I don't know, it's just something that pops into my head.
No, I think that you're exactly nailing it on the head, which is like the idea that, you know, it's not actually light, dark. It's actually you in the middle trying to figure out between the light and the dark, because you can't always be purely selfless. Mm-hmm. And like, you have to be able to survive to help protect others. You have to be able to have the right safe environment for you to be able to bring light to the world or to bring compassion to the world. And that's the lesson that Ahsoka teaches us. And you get it like nail on the head. You're so smart. Exactly. You get it. Yeah.
I've been obsessed and hyper-focused over this for years for no reason.
Yeah, you're like, yes.
All these books were for something.
All right. So the next question is from Cleverly Coco. What is your favorite Star Wars outfit or any movie costume?
Ooh, okay. My favorite Star Wars costume, I already know this one. Padme's picnic yellow dress. My dream dress. I want to be in that dress.
I also have a Padme one.
Yeah?
Yeah. I love her, the one by the lake where she's in the sunset dress, and yes, it's got the two like armband things, and it's like all flowy.
I want to cosplay that so bad.
Why the yellow dress? Why?
Well, yellow's my favorite color. So yellow's my favorite color, and I was like, I absolutely love this. And I love how her hair is sort of reminiscent of Leia's hair, which I feel like is in that scene with the nets on the side of her head. And I love the flowers. And I had a dress when I was younger that I called my Padme dress. It looked nothing like that dress, but it was yellow, and it had like these little like red roses, like tiny little red roses on it. And I called it my Padme dress, and I was obsessed with it. And then I grew out of it because I got like too tall. So I got a huge growth spurt where I just shot up, and I couldn't wear it anymore, and I was distraught. So I just came up. I just love that dress. One day I will have enough money to get that dress commissioned for no reason at all. No reason at all.
Like, just because Padme really threw like out all of her fashion for somebody that she wasn't supposed to be like flirting with, because like she got that dress, she had the lakeside dress, she had that super sexy number when they had like the late night hangout by the fire, like the black one.
Yes.
Damn.
Yeah. I really love like the light blue one that has like shows her stomach, and like, she's like, when they're on, like, I think it's when they're on Tatooine, and, you know, Anakin goes off to like kill sand people. But I really like that dress or that outfit. That's really cute as well. But a favorite movie costume other than Star Wars? Oh, I'm a princess at heart. So the Cinderella dress from like the live action with
the one that took like 400 hours or something to sew.
Yeah, that one. I love that dress. It's beautiful. It's stunning. Like, amazing. Yeah, so that's another favorite movie costume of mine. I absolutely love it. And then that Wonder Woman outfit from, like, the newest one.
Oh.
That hasn't come out yet, but the golden one with, like, the... Oh, that looks so dope. If you've seen the trailer where, like, she has, like, this golden armor with, like, these golden wings.
And oh, yeah. She looks
dope. She looks sick.
So good.
Yeah. So yeah. I would say those are, like, the top three. And the Wonder Woman hasn't even come out yet. I'm just like, it's already up there. It wins.
Yeah. Like, I'm really trying to think of an amazing costume that I really love. From like, it's just not something that I think about too often, because like, costuming to me is just like, it's supposed to just blend into the story so much, you know. Oh goodness, as I'm looking at like nothing but Marvel figures in front of me, I'm like, that's not a good answer. Yeah, exactly. And I'm not thinking of anything in particular at this moment. I'm sorry. I'm not thinking of anything from another movie that I particularly love so much, other than I do very much love it when women are given amazing dresses to wear. And I know that's just, it's just selfish, but I love dresses. And especially when dresses have pockets, I'm like, whoa, that dress had pockets. Actually, you know what? A different Cinderella, but Ever After with, yeah, when she's the butterfly.
Yeah, that's really cute. I really like that.
Yeah, that was really good. I love that.
I just like dressing up. Clearly, it's why I got into cosplay.
Yeah. All right. This question is for you, and it's from Sophia, although she hasn't joined Twitter. Okay. Hi, Rihanna. How did you first get into Star Wars, and what made you decide to join fandom Twitter and then regret it ever since? No, just kidding.
Into Star Wars. Well, I've mentioned this before, but Star Wars is a family thing for my family. My dad's obsessed with Star Wars. He always has been. Star Wars, I think it was The Empire Strikes Back was the first movie my dad ever watched in an American movie theater. Because my family's Jamaican. So both my parents are Jamaican immigrants. And that was the first movie he ever watched in America. And he was like, this is amazing. And because he's a big nerd. He tries to act like he's not, but he's a big nerd. So when he saw it, he was like, yes, I love this. And he became obsessed. And he passed that obsession down to me. The first movie I ever watched in theater was, I believe, The Phantom Menace. Was the first movie I ever watched in theaters. I was 2. And they had done a re-release of the movie. And my dad said I was quiet the whole time. I just stared up at the screen and I just watched the whole thing. So since birth, I guess, there was a period of my life where I didn't, like when I was younger, like in elementary school, where I was like, Star Wars is not for me. It's for boys or whatever. And then like middle school came around and I just became obsessed again. So that's sort of how I first got into Star Wars. What made me decide to join fandom Twitter? Well, I was on Tumblr and then they had the great nipple debate of whatever year that was, where they banned nipples, and I was like, I gotta go. This is all downhill from here. And I had a Twitter, but I didn't use it much, and my friend's like, you gotta get on Twitter more, like Twitter's where it's at. I'm like, go on Twitter. And I was like, okay, whatever, I don't know. I'll go on Twitter. And I was on Twitter, I think last year is when I started getting on it more. I wasn't really on it more until like, you know, November. And then November is really when I started tweeting more about it as Star Wars got closer and closer and closer. And I didn't really start making content until I think February of this year. So you can thank Ryan Amato for me being on Twitter because he bullied me into it. That's how I decided to join fandom of Twitter, and I don't regret it just yet.
I only regret it like once a month. But in general, you know, Twitter brings me a lot of joy. I just have a lot of filters up and I filter out a lot of stuff. So you gotta curate your own experience.
Yeah, definitely. Like people were talking about drama on timeline, and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on with that. I don't follow any of those people. They're like, if you don't block this person, I'm like, well, I don't follow them anyway. So I guess my spidey senses were on point.
Exactly. The next one is from Isabel. I love What the Force. Your interview with Maggie Nowakowska was just great. Since
it was.
Then I have been wondering about transformative work, social media, and headcanons. I want to know what is the weirdest headcanon or prompt you've seen in fandom/social media. I would say the weirdest headcanon/speculation that I created myself or thought up was Dark Union, which was this huge thing about how I thought Palpatine would want to join with Rey for her power being, you know, the young hot force user in the galaxy. And then I was right. And I was like, but at what cost?
Yeah.
As far as like headcanons out there, I love that Hux has a cat. I think that it's just absolutely amazing. And then off of that, I love the idea that he survived and is now together with Rose.
Listen. Hux is not dead. He's fine. He's okay. He survived through my love of him, through the galaxy and through the fictional space that he exists in. He's alive. He's okay. He's all right. He's chilling. One thing I really love in like modern AUs and fan fiction is like the Skywalkers are Jewish. I really love that. In fan fictions, that I love
I've
that.
I've never heard that. That's awesome. Really? Yeah.
Every time I'm reading a fan fiction where the Skywalkers are like celebrating Christmas, it feels wrong. Like, and I'm like, no, they're Jewish in a modern AU. I don't know why, but it just feels right. It feels right to me. It feels accurate. I really like that one. The weirdest headcanon.
Snalps.
Huh?
Snalps. Snoke and Palpatine are actually together. Honestly, my son thought it up on his own, so it's gotta have some legs. Like we just recently saw TFA in theaters. It was an empty theater. We went to go see it, him and I. He's like super excited to see The Last Jedi. I'm actually waiting to see if it'll come back in theaters is like one of those things. But he was like, and Snoke and Palpatine are married, and then Palpatine died 17 times. And I'm like, what is going on with you?
oh my goodness, I lost my whole train of thought. But like, he just built himself, you know, man, you know, like Rocky Horror Picture Show. He just built himself a man in the lab. That's what happened with Palpatine.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, exactly. Mariette in the chat was actually like, MC, where have you been? And I've been unable to read fanfic since Tross. Like, I know. So feel bad for me. So
sorry.
I don't know.
The fanfiction that's come out of Tross has honestly been so inspiring. When you finally are able to stomach it, because I wasn't able to stomach it for a few months myself. Mm-hmm. It's honestly so like some of the stuff that's coming out is so inspiring how creative this fandom is, but it also makes me very frustrated because I'm like, there are people who came out of the gate right after leaving The Rise of Skywalker who wrote a better movie in 3 days and they wrote a novel length better story than what people who get paid to do this. And I'm like, how did that happen? And the same thing with like after The Last Jedi, people were just like, this created a whole like a plot for The Rise of Skywalker that's 10 times better than people who got paid to do it. But that's what I really love about fan fiction. It's just like people who are writing because they love it, mm-hmm. you know, not because, you know, they're getting paid to do it or they're not afraid to what anyone else is going to say about it because they're writing it for themselves. And I think as a writer myself, like, you have to start there from the point you're creating this for yourself, first and foremost. And if you don't create it for yourself, it becomes emotionally bankrupt, which I feel like The Rise of Skywalker, the people creating it weren't making it for themselves. They're trying to make it for other people. Where Rian Johnson, he was trying to make a movie that he would have enjoyed to go see in a theater. Solo, still you could still feel that love in the made. I know lots of people don't like Solo. I personally liked it because you could tell that it was made with like love for the franchise, even if it wasn't perfect. You could tell that was made with love.
Yeah, I struggle with Tross in particular because I know many of the creators involved behind the scenes, and like I've spoken with Phil Shostak, and to say that like the concept artists and the creature designers and the set dressers and like everybody individually contributing their pieces didn't make it with love is I think kind of maybe not as respectful to them. But it's hard because the truth that Terrio is telling and JJ, they were just plugging into kind of a different set of mythology than we had already invested in. And, you know, I've said this very much from my reaction to Tross, that like there is an entire set of fans out there that were disappointed with the Disney acquisition and losing their story of Star Wars, and that we just need to become more comfortable with that everybody kind of has a different lens of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I just hope that it plugs into the core themes of Star Wars, which at parts, The Rise of Skywalker didn't land for me.
Well, what I mean by The Rise of Skywalker, I felt like it, like, yes, I feel like a lot of individuals put their heart into it, clearly, because, like, the acting was amazing. It was a beautifully made movie. Like, it was beautiful. Minus the blue filter. Yeah, and, like, you could tell, like, it was beautifully made. And people put their hearts into it, clearly. But what I mean, I feel like a lot of things fell short because it felt like there was a corporate cutting scissors kind of cutting through a lot of that love and a lot of that beauty. So, yeah, so that's what I mean, like, made... Like individual.
Well, I think there was conflicting goals. Like,
yes.
One of the things I've never really talked about on the podcast, but you can actually go and just read the articles on the Chinese market specifically only had 3 weeks with The Last Jedi before it was actually banned in the country. Mm. So when we look at The Rise of Skywalker and we see that a lot of it feels like it's overdoing. The Last Jedi, it's actually because it is. Because, you know, part of it was, I think, they did the narrative to replace The Last Jedi for an audience that they felt was going to be one of their bigger audiences. Mm. And so, like, if you've never seen a movie in a country and you're like, I'm trying to replace this part of this movie... this is not an excuse. I don't think that they should have done that personally. I think they just continue it on, and audiences are smart, especially Chinese audiences are very smart. If you make a good movie and they're like, where's the middle part? They'll figure it out. Or you could just talk about what happened, and it would have been there could have been other ways, but they absolutely replaced parts of The Last Jedi in The Rise of Skywalker and repeated it, which it didn't need to do because The Last Jedi was pulled from theaters 3 weeks in.
Yeah. You know, and I also, I feel like I lost trusting your audience. I feel like creators have in lots of things have failed to trust their audience is going to stick with them.
Well, and like, there's been some weird choices from Disney, like Artemis Fowl. Like, what happened with Artemis Fowl was very odd. Like, they're like, we can't, you know, make a kid a master criminal. I mean, and it's like,
the premise of the story.
But that was literally the premise of the story. And it's like, why do you think kids like that? Why do you think people like that story? So like, it's about being brave as storytellers too, I think a little bit, and not being afraid of YouTube, as we talk on YouTube, feedback.
Yeah. I think fandom discussions are important for the fandom.
Yeah.
I don't think they're important for the creators to be engaged in. I do like when creators are aware of the fandom and it's welcoming to the fandom, but I don't think they should be sloshing around in the mire of fandom. That you don't belong here. Because if you stay here for too long, then you're going to let it affect the story that you're trying to tell. It's a interesting situation.
It definitely felt, Tross to me felt like the story itself ended up being committee driven. So what are the decisions that we have to make to make sure that, you know, oh, is it going to work in the Chinese market, which is always a question on Disney's mind nowadays. So don't ever joke yourself about that one. That's they're trying to find how to land in the Chinese market. I can tell you, just tell a straight enemies to lovers story that's set in China and you will land in the Chinese market. Use Jaywalk Studio and do a Chinese based enemies to lovers story and you will land in China and you will make all of the money. Although some people are like bored of that trope now because they've been doing it for so long. But they would recognize it.
Yeah. I think also, like, I'm not going to presume to know what's going on at Disney's company boardrooms.
No.
But I'm going to assume a little that it's probably very white.
Men?
Yeah, and men. And I feel like, you know, a lot of this simple solutions to feel like what would land instead of like blindly throwing a dart at the wall, invite some people who know those markets into the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then make them comfortable with, I think that's the first, invite them into the room, but also make them feel comfortable using their voice. Because a lot of the times I've been invited into a room because they're like, we want more diverse voices. And then when they hear those voices, they are upset that that voice didn't conform to what they want.
And what was the point of inviting you into the room, Rihanna?
Yeah, it's sort of just like, look, we have a black female person here. Look how forward we are. I feel like
it's also about trust, like being able to say, like, I trust you to tell stories and we will stand behind you and enabling those stories. Like, I remember thinking people complain a lot about Lena Dunham and girls. And I'm like, you know what? Judd Apatow enabled her. So you have to think about the people that are being enabled and are the enablers of certain content and like who's saying yes to certain things. It's honestly, people just need to take more pictures of people making decisions in the boardrooms, because that would be very telling. And it would always be just a table full of white people, especially white men.
Yeah, definitely. So I feel like, that's we got to infiltrate. you know, someone has to do it, you know, slowly.
I did like what, Leslie Headley said, the important thing is to, if you get an elevator ride up, you send the elevator back down and bring the next person up, because it's part of our job of as people who have platforms and power to uplift and support others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's a struggle. I don't know. And I struggle with it personally because I want more content that appeals to diverse voices. Like I tweeted out, I'm like, I don't really need to see another white woman in a role for like a really long, like give it like 10 years. And then like main characters, like every other like type of person. I don't care. I only really watch like non-Western media now for enjoyment because I'm sick of the same, you know, stories that are being shoved at me. And it's very rare that I'll pick up a Western media show other than Star Wars.
Yeah, I find myself not really watching regular TV now. I definitely listen to more podcasts than I ever have before. I mentioned Critical Role. I love listening to other D&D podcasts and other D&D live role-playing shows. I love watching those shows. Just different. And I mainly spend most of my time reading fan fiction anyway. That's most that I do. I barely read books anymore. I'm a liar. Barely read books. I'm an English major. I read books all the time. I feel like I don't really go to like regular shows anymore. And most shows that I got into, like, I just like drop again, unless it's Star Wars. Then I think the last show I watched in like full was like Hollywood.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. But that's also a very diverse cast. It's a whole different story. I think that was the last one. And then before that was like Black Sails, which can't recommend enough. Black Sails is very good. If you like pirates.
Ooh, pirates.
So, and very diverse storytelling.
Thinking of stuff that I absolutely enjoyed that was Western media, Russian Doll, which was Leslie Headley, who's going to be show running a Star Wars show. And it's psychological, and I cannot recommend it enough. And it's Star Wars. It's so Star Wars, and I love it.
It's on my list.
Yeah, like I find myself watching femgaze media from elsewhere in the world because that's where you can get it. And women will. Yeah, K-dramas, C-dramas are really, really big. I've also started to pick up some dramas from like Spain. And I'm starting to pick up some Indian media too, just to like give myself some different perspective, and some enemies to lovers is in that one too.
My dad has been on a kick with Nigerian movies or Nollywood movies.
Oh, cool.
They're really out there. But I feel like Korean dramas prepared me for Nollywood movies. They're very like, if you ever watch one,
inoculated you. So what are they like? I'm interested. You got to give me a rec.
So, I have to think of like one that I was like,
anything super mythical. I love mythic stuff from like other cultures.
Yeah. I like, they're really like dramatic, and they get into the acting is like not the greatest.
Oh, Kippo in the Age of Wonder Beasts is something I watched with my kids. Yeah, I did watch that. That's also a super diverse cast and really funky and weird and science fiction. And yet also there's kind of like a spiritual side because she always has these dreams of herself. Anyways, there's...
That's cool. I got it. There's so many things on my list, but I just like, fan fiction has taken over my life. It's really bad because I'm like, I need to watch these things. And I'm like, oh, but like, you know, Sword of the Jedi.
Time.
Time. And I'm also trying to create things too, on top of consuming things, and you know, also staying in contact with everyone through a phone or laptop or anything like that.
Yeah. So Nollywood, what can we expect from Nollywood?
Lots of Rivals to Lovers. If you like Rivals to Lovers, that's your juice right there. But there's also a lot of love triangles. Super weird.
Are there any on Netflix that we could?
Yeah. Netflix has a whole bunch of them.
Sweet.
I know that John Boyega is partnered with Netflix to create a whole bunch of them. So a whole bunch of them should be coming out after Corona, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Are they subbed or dubbed, or are they in English?
They're sub. They're subtitled.
Okay. Well,
sometimes
I'm.
They slip into English. Yeah. Sometimes they slip into English. Yeah.
Kind of like K dramas where they use English words and you're like.
Yeah. But they slip into English because in Nigeria, in Nigeria, they often use English as well for business dealings and things like that. So, yeah.
Drop your recs and we will all
put
check
them on
out
Twitter.
Nollywood is the new thing and we're going to love it. Yeah.
Please do. They need some love.
All right, Rihanna, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh my goodness.
This is so much fun. Where can people find you if they are looking for you in all of the places that you are online?
All the places. I am not on Tumblr as I mentioned anymore. I think I deleted my Tumblr if I remember correctly. So I'm not there. But I'm on Twitter a lot. Bina Babble, if you type that in, it's Bina and then Babel. That's how it's spelled, how it sounds. Type that in, you'll find me on Twitter. And I think I put it in the chat earlier that my TikTok is @Bina_Ray. Again, it's Ray as in how you spell Ray in Star Wars, and then Bina. It's really simple. I make it easy for you guys. But those are the two places you can find me. When I launch my YouTube channel, I'll announce it on my Twitter. So if you're looking for that. Yeah. And I'll also, I know some people mentioned that they don't have Twitter. So I'm sorry. Whenever I announce my YouTube, I hope you can find it.
Yeah. I can actually post on the community section of mine and link to your channel too.
Yes. So I will tell you when that happens.
And I'm very, very excited about it.
Yeah. I'm excited too.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. Make sure to like and subscribe the episode, as well as if you're not already following me on Twitter and you want to, I'm on WT4 Show. There'll be much more updates coming up in the next week for the changed to the site. So check out whattheforce.ca. We have amazing writers that are coming in to share their perspective of Star Wars, as well as kind of the meta of Star Wars. And I'm very, very excited to share that with everybody. So thank you all for coming out, and I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Cheers.
Bye.